Palms pressed together, let us say the Sufi invocation of Pir Murshid Inayat Khan. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Someone needs to mute your. Someone's unmuted, so could you please mute yourself? Thank you. And Gemma, I think I'll make you a co-host, so if I need help with that, you can do that as well. Thank you. One more invocation can never be enough. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who formed the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So today the topic is in remembrance of Murshid. I'm going to move this because I'm a little off center from my camera, and I want to look at you. I thought it was fitting to talk about this idea of the virtue of loving sacrifice, because any of us that knew Pir Vilayat knew, even into a ripe old age, how much travel he did. That's a sacrifice to be away from the comfort of our home and our families. Murshid Hidayat did that too until a ripe old age, Murshid Karim Bashk. So there is a sacrifice that is made. And we've all done that in our own way. When I reflect back for education, for example, many of us have advanced degrees. And there was a point at which I had been offered really good jobs at both Jim Henson and the Muppet people in New York, as well as Hallmark Cards as an art director. And I thought, I have to go on to graduate school. I have to become a designer that has a greater understanding of theory and application. So that was a sacrifice I made because I was a very poor student. I did have scholarships, but I had to make my way in terms of rent and food. I didn't have support otherwise. And it was well worth the sacrifice. So that's one example, just in a very practical way. But there are other ways that we'll be talking about. So Murshid says, and this is from the Bulasaki, it always means that we must sacrifice something very dear to you when God's call comes. When God's call comes. And then a little bit of bio, which we all know, but it's good to refer to it. I know that my teacher, Kamtul Rinpoche, whenever he'd give a teaching, he'd go way, way, way back and give this whole history and then get to the teaching. So there's some, there's some history of how teachers do that kind of setup. That's like the beautiful setting for the jewel. So Hazrat Inayat Khan Murshid had been a renowned musician before he gave up his art in order to dedicate himself entirely to the Sufi message. And this was the message in which he was entrusted with by his Murshid, Abu Hashim Madani. Hazrat Inayat Khan readily followed the practice of the ancient Sufis in expressing esoteric truths in terms of sound and music. And we know that because, if we look at his the Gayan, the Vadan, and the Natan, those are filled with musical terminology. And so it was part of his culture. It was part of his education. He was a professor of music, and he brought that into the Sufi message. And those of us that have traveled in circles or traveled to India, I know David's been there, Gemma's been there, I think perhaps others, but always music is brought into the celebration, devotional music. We see that also in the Hindu tradition. We see that in the Catholic Church. We see it everywhere, beautiful choirs in every denomination. And so music is a part of it. It's a language that is, there are words to it, but there's something else that it speaks to in our body And so Merchant will give us a little hint about that here. These are from his own words, from his autobiography. And he says, "I gave up my music because I had received from it all that I had to receive. To serve God, one must sacrifice what is dearest to one. And so I sacrificed my music." I'm going to pause here because Murshid's not the only one I've heard this from. Some of you know Sri Karuna Mai Ma. She's came to Kansas City. You had an opportunity to meet her at Sufi camps. Same thing for her. She had a great devotion. Well, she had a great devotion to Murshid, actually. She, until her passing, she was always invited to give a devotional song at the Urs in New Delhi. But she was a master musician, and she was a class A musician in India, which is the top ranking that you can get, such as our Murshid. She was also someone that often appeared on All Air India Radio singing. So she's was very well known, and she was the vice principal at the university in Agra. Well, she was so touched by the teachings of Sri Aurobindo, she decided that she would renounce her professorship and her title at the university in Agra, and she would go live at the Sri Aurobindo ashram in New Delhi. Well, she had it in her mind that she would be allowed to, immerse herself in devotional song, and she wrote them as well as sang them. Well, what happened instead? Just like Murshid, they knew that she had administrative capabilities, and they made her one of the trustees that was in charge of running the ashram for many, many years. So she too was required to give up her music in deference to this path that she was on of integral yoga of Sri Aurobindo. So if we examine our own lives, we all know we've done that in some way. Either we've married someone and moved to a certain place, or we've taken up a career that's required some sacrifice, and so on. So Murshid goes on to say, "I had composed songs. I sang and played the veena. And practicing the music, I arrived at a stage where I touched the music of the spheres." And those are in capital letters, music of the spheres. "Then every soul for me became a musical note." And there's all this literature now on finding our note, finding our song, tuning to that, tuning to the music of the spheres, bringing ourselves in harmony with that. They're now discovering that this is really something to find that inner note, and that it brings about a condition of greater happiness and satisfaction in one's life. But Murshid here says, "I arrived at a stage where I touched the music of the spheres. Then every soul became for me a musical note. And all of life became music. Inspired by this, I spoke to the people, and those who were attracted by my words listened to them instead of listening to my songs. Now, if I do anything, it is to tune souls instead of instruments, to harmonize people instead of notes." And I've said it many times, and Murshid has too throughout his teachings, the idea of us tuning to a certain note is, he gives the analogy as the musician that strikes a note through which the whole orchestra tunes itself. And he talks about that as being the keynote. And he encourages us to be that. Instead of trying to bring people into our song, can we elevate our consciousness and help to elevate others by finding that keynote? "Now, if I do anything, it is to tune souls instead of instruments, to harmonize people instead of notes. If there's anything in my philosophy, it's the law of harmony, that one must put oneself in harmony with oneself and others. I have found that in every word, a certain musical value, a melody in every thought, harmony in every feeling. And I've tried to interpret the same thing, with clear and simple words, so that those who used to listen to my music, they will also now listen to my words. I played the veena until my heart turned into the very instrument. I offered this instrument to the divine musician, capital D, capital M, and the only musician existing. Since then, I have become his flute. And when he chooses, he plays his music. The people give me credit for this music, which in reality is not due to me, but to the musician who plays on his instrument. And so again, being mindful, those of us that have studied the biography of Mersch or heard stories about his life on our website, by the way, we have Sharif Graham, who was a great student of Mersch's. And he worked in the Nechbach Foundation, the archives, for many, many years. One that was such an amazing resource to those teachings. And he gave lectures on Mersch's life, and he gave us permission to put those on our website. So they're there if you'd like to listen. I think there are five lectures that he gave in San Francisco. But now think of it. If you have the message volumes, those new brown volumes, you can look in a chronology because they're done by years or a few years at a time, how many places Mersch was always traveling to. And then, of course, travel wasn't as convenient as it is now. So he was giving up the comfort of his, home. He was his, not only he, but his family was sacrificing his absence. If you travel much and you visit other people, you have to surrender to their eating schedule, what it is they eat, et cetera, et cetera. All these things, the comfort of one's own bed, these are all small sacrifices, but for a greater good, a loving sacrifice, a virtue. And I thought, I'm going to put a picture up in a moment of Mersch. It's one of my favorites. It may not be yours. If you have one in your room you'd rather look at, do that. And I'd like to work with, I'm going to now send these. These are the series of practices that we'll do. And I thought we would do Ya Mersch, Ya Karim. And Ya Karim is the bestowing of endless gifts with full integrity. And of course, for me, and I know that if you're here, for you, this message is a perennial gift that keeps giving. And so it is certainly a representation of Karim. And Karim is inexhaustible. It keeps giving. It's a bountiful energy, and it keeps on giving, and it flows like a stream of water. And it reminds me of that line from the prayer pier. Thy words flow as a sacred river. Thy words flow as a sacred river. It's like Kareem, that's the message. So we'll do one more practice. And so you can keep this up. I'll just say it for you and I'll tell you about it. The La Ilaha El Allah. No, La Ilaha El Allah. La Ilaha. Okay, La, it's there's a rhythm to it. La Ilaha Illallah. Hazrat Nai Khan Rasulallah. La Ilaha Illallah. Hazrat Nai Khan Rasulallah. La ilaha el Allah, Hazrat Nayat Khan Rasul Allah. How did I arrive at this practice? It was given to me decades ago. I was traveling with a very senior Sufi who'd been on the path for a number of years. And this person told to me that Pir Vilayat had given her this practice. To use when traveling, to use for protection, to use for guidance, to use as a, this shroud of Mershid's love, embracing and holding us while we traveled. So I thought it would be good to share that with you because I don't think I've given that to people before. I always say it to myself when I begin travels or get on the airplane and it starts to take off or land. But anyway, here it is. Now, give me a moment. I'm going to share my screen And all right. Okay. Can everyone see that?
Yes.
I think it's a beautiful glance. And so let's say maybe 33 times, Ya Murshid, Ya Kareem, while we're glancing upon the image and Murshid is glancing back of us at us. Ya Murshid, Ya Kareem, 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 Ya Murshid, Ya Kareem. And then let's just say now in a whisper, Murshid. And just silently on the breath. Ya Murshid, Ya Kareem. And we'll do that same series with La Ilaha Illallah, Hazrat Nait Khan, Rasul Allah. Rasul is the messenger of God, and he certainly delivered this Sufi message that has been living for more than 100 years. Okay. La Ilaha Illallah. Hazrat Anayat Khan, Rasul Allah. La ilaha illallah. Hazrat Anayat Khan, Rasulullah. La ilaha illallah. Hazrat Anayat Khan, Rasul Allah. La ilaha illallah. Hazrat Anayat Khan, Rasul Allah. La ilaha illallah. Hazrat Anayat Khan, Rasul Allah. La ilaha illallah, Hazrat Nait Khan 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 Rasul Allah. Now whisper. And now just silently. There is no God, only God is, and Hazrat Anayat Khan is the messenger among many of God. going to leave this photo up for just a little while longer and speak about this image. Well, now it's probably been a couple decades ago almost. We took up something called the Picture Resurrection Project. And Murshid Hidayat and I made a small selection of photos that we wanted restored. This is amongst them. There are a few others. And the person that did this was a master printer. He had something that was called an iris printer, and he was in a guild of printers, which is a very fine printing process. Well, we had met online somehow, and during a federation at the abode, I had given him these photos and I asked if he could restore them. He not only restored them, but he printed them. And so what you're seeing, it appears to be a soft black and white photo, but when printed, is actually made of all of the elemental colors, which I think makes this extremely mystical because it's all right there. And Gemma, perhaps unmute yourself. Do we still have any of those photos that are available for sale? Do you have them?
We have a few small ones, very maybe five or less of the small images, and I have perhaps we have in our collection a few medium size of Hazrat and icon in the zikr
Okay.
pose, and also perhaps a couple 18 or 16 by 20
On the
prints of the
larger one.
zikr and the vina.
Yeah. So this is something we can post a link and we can let you know, and maybe we can figure something out if anyone's interested, or just write me if you're interested, and then we'll figure it out from there. We can show you the photos that are available, but I thought you might like to know that about this photo. And in the real ones, if you look very close, you'll see that it is all subtly those elemental colors. But anyway, thank you, Mershit. So it's interesting because Hazrat Anayat Khan illustrates the idea of sacrifice by talking about another prophet, and that prophet is Abraham. And of course, we know that there's a story of Abraham and Isaac in the Bible, Book of Genesis. And Murshid says of Abraham, Abraham's life made him not only a prophet, but also a murshid. Abraham was a mystic. He gave counsel to those who came to him in difficulty. He examined them, treated their minds, and healed their souls according to their needs. The most remarkable thing one finds in Abraham is that besides being a prophet and a mystic, he lived a life of an ordinary human being, at one with his community in their times of pleasure and sorrow. Well, of course, this reminds us of Murshid as well. Same. He didn't go to a monastery or cave. He was amongst the people, and the students came to him, and he went to the students. So one story, this again is Hazrat Anayat speaking to us. One story from the life of Abraham is has excuse me one story from the life of Abraham that has been a subject of great debate in the East is the story of the sacrifice of Isaac. In the story, we're told, and again, this is in Genesis, that God promised Abraham and Sarah that they would have a son, even though Sarah was past childbearing age. They did indeed have a son, and they named him Isaac. Well, this is a little aside, but also kind of, it's very sweet, I think. Isaac means the one who laughs or laughter. And so when you think of that, I mean, these subtleties that are embedded into the scriptures and into Murshid's teaching. So they have a son, It's after childbearing years, so it's a sense of miracle. And the name that's given is the one who laughs. So who's laughing? Are the people laughing at them when they think they've become impregnated? Are they laughing at, the community? Is Isaac the one that's laughing, or is God laughing? There's like all those permutations to this story. At least I see that. So the story of Abraham and Isaac is that God is testing Abraham's obedience, and he commands him to sacrifice their beloved son. And of course, that's the only son that Sarah and Abraham had together. So Abraham felt he must obey, and he prepared the sacrifice, and he took Isaac to Mount Moriah as Jesus, excuse me, as God had commanded him. But all of a sudden, when he was about to slay Isaac, God stopped him. An angel appeared and said, "No, stop." All right. So again, the story in the East is of great debate. And to our minds, it could be very disturbing. Now, I haven't had any children, but those of you that have can imagine how this would really test one's faith. And, I wouldn't do this to a friend or any of my dearly beloved pets either, So we know this feeling of how can you ask me of this, but you are asking this of me, and I must do it. And I have to say, my own teachers have tested me in ways that, oh my God, they would ask me to do things that I did not think were possible for me. I mean, utter fear entered me at the idea of having to take up such a task. But more than that, disappointing one of my teachers. And of course, Murshid Hidayat did that. In many ways, Pir Vilayat did that. And I know Sri Karunamayi did that. And my Tibetan Buddhist teacher, Khamtul Rinpoche, His Eminence, did that. And so these things happen in our lives. And we have to decide if we can just say, if we're going to say no, or we're going to take it as a great teaching to develop our capacity. So I just put that out there. I'm not a special person by any means. I'm a hard worker, maybe, and they saw that in me. And so they gave me big jobs to do. So Murshid says people can ask a thousand questions about the proper reason and justification for such an act or for such a request. Yet if we look at it from the ideal point of view, no sacrifice for a beloved ideal can be too great. Then Murshid gives an example in his time. And he, of course, now is speaking about World War I. And he says this: there are numberless souls whose dear ones, their beloved ones, have been sacrificed in this recent war. They could do nothing else. They had to surrender their will to the ideal of the nation, offer this sacrifice for the national cause without thinking for one moment that it was unusual. And so in our day-to-day living, we see that as well. And perhaps in your lives, in your career, there may be some promotions that have tested you, have challenged you. And sometimes it might be easy to say, "Oh, no, not me." But what happens in the end is it just develops a greater capacity to serve and to love and to grow. And so we take it in that way. So during the time of Abraham, there existed a group of thinkers who devoted their lives, excuse me, to the thought of God and to the search for eternal truth. They spent their time in seclusion and contemplation, and they helped those who came to them to be guided on the spiritual path. This also, I remember while I was in India, there were some of the teachers that were living in seclusion, but we could nonetheless go visit. And when I'd go, it was such a humble little place, hardly room for a couple of individuals in the space, but I would be invited in and offered tea and be able to ask for what it was that I was requesting. And sometimes it was for health because, health was challenged in those days. And sometimes it was for advice. Anyway, these people, they may be in seclusion, but they are willing to, these holy ones are willing to allow people to come into their space and to be helpful. They see that their practice and their evolution is not just for oneself, it's for all beings, and they offer it in that way. So for me, I've seen that in living. I think that's in everyday religion. We see that with ministers and priests and so forth. So Murshid says, in their symbology, it is in their symbology that we find in their traditions of Abraham sacrificing his son for the love of God. In Sufism, human life is considered as a line with two ends. Murshid gives this analogy in many different ways on many different topics. This idea of there's these two poles. So here's earth, here's heaven, here's God, here we are. Here's the temporal world, here's the spiritual world. And he lists all these things. He says the two ends, one end in mortal, one worldly, one spiritual, one the unlimited God, and the other the limited God. One end could be considered the parent, Almighty Father, Mother, and the other the child, we as the children of God. And then he explains this a bit more. Excuse me. He says, as a child is loved by their mother and father more than the parent loves their own self, so the body is loved by the spirit more than the spirit loves itself. So this has to do with our free will. What are our choices that we're going to make? That's a whole other teaching. We can find that in the will, human and divine. There's these teachings Murshid gives, but here he's alluding to it. So I'm going to read that again. That is why in our human condition, we often neglect the happiness of the spirit for bodily appetites, comforts, and pleasures, because the spirit loves the body. How else would it have come into us? That life was breathed into us, and it's through us that God experiences the world. We are the manifestation. So there's these circles and circles within this thinking. But think about it. The sacrifice of Abraham's son, in Murshid's ideas, symbolized the complete crushing of the human ego. This is Abraham crushing himself, his attachments, this willingness. He gave up this limited self and attachment, and that can only be done for a higher gain. Such is the love of God. Murshid says, Sufis call it fana, which means annihilation. So this is we could say crush, but we could say managing, or how about this word? Mastering the ego. So the ego isn't a master of us. We are master of the ego, and we can work in partnership. The ego can be very helpful. It can keep us safe. It can make sure we take our rest or take our food. So these things, it's not an all or nothing. We have to find our way of comprehending this as Murshid intended it. The Sufis call this fana, which means annihilation. And I will say there are different levels of fana. There is a annihilation in the manner of the teacher, in the manner of the prophet, in the manner of the messenger, in the manner of God. So there are these different levels that one goes through. It's a complex cosmology, but it's also beautiful to have an awareness of it. The underlying meaning is the way of the Sufi who progresses by self-control and arrives at an eternal goal. The underlying meaning is the way of the Sufi who progresses by self-control and arrives at the eternal goal. I thought it was so, well, for me, I was fascinated because this teaching just emerged. And now we're having this teaching. We know that Murshid's Urs, when he returned, he passed away on February 5th, 1927, and so there was worldwide acknowledgement of this and celebration of it in India, where his body is re at rest, in remembrance of this. Because for the Sufis, this is when we return to the source and goal, and so it's a celebration. They call it a wedding day, returning to the beloved. But it's also interesting that we're coming upon this, in the Christian liturgical observance since Lent. And Lent is something that, if you've practiced it, is a voluntary sacrifice. So one may do some kind of fasting. In other words, giving up some food or treat that you like, just to remind yourself every time you have that urge and you sacrifice it. It's like a call to prayer. And it's good to kind of help control those bodily appetites. But someone might also give up cursing, for example, or trying to reframe their thinking process. There are many ways we can do this. Some people, especially Catholics, might take up the practice of giving up meat on Friday again, though it's not required any longer. But coincidentally and in sync with that, the month of Ramadan is going to begin. These are both starting at the end of this month. And we know that Ramadan is a month of fasting. So fasting from sunrise to sunset, including water, unless for health reasons you can't do it. So that is, again, an idea that, I'm hungry. I'm going to pray. I'm going to pray harder. When doing sweat lodges, those of you that have done it, I've always been instructed by the leaders of those lodges, if you're suffering from the heat, it means you're not praying hard enough. So it's like that, okay? So these are important observances. And even if we're not taking up these observances, to be mindful of them and maybe tune into it. And what's the harm to take up something like that? It can help us develop a discipline. And when we feel an urge, it calls us to prayer. That's how I use it. Maybe you have other manners in which we can share after this class together. So Murshid goes on to say, when we think deeply about the problem of life, when we think deeply about the problem or problems of life, there's no path in the world, whether spiritual or material, which we can successfully tread without a sacrifice. Sometimes the sacrifice is great and sometimes small. Sometimes the sacrifice is made first before achieving success, and sometimes afterwards. As sacrifice is necessary in life, it is made by everyone in some form or other or another. But when it is made willingly, it turns into a virtue. When we do it willingly, it becomes a virtue. The greater the ideal, the greater the sacrifice it demands. And if one studies wisely the process of advancement through life in every direction, one finds there is nothing but a continual sacrifice. And happiness comes from understanding that this is the nature of life. And from not being hurt or troubled by this, let's kind of take this in, right? Because this is something right now, the world is in strife. But Murshid is saying that life, it can be a continual sacrifice. And happiness comes from understanding that this is the nature of life. We're not in heaven yet. Heaven and hell is made by our thoughts and our actions. But, so we could be, but can we maintain that constantly in a waking state and even into our sleep? He goes on, I'm going to read it again. And happiness comes from understanding that this is the nature of life, speaking of continual sacrifice, nothing but continual sacrifice, he says. And from not being hurt or troubled by this, but knowing that it is by sacrifice made until the end that one attains to the desired goal. So just, you take that in however that feels right for you and sort of move forward in a way that feels right for you. But just, think about it. We have to ask ourselves, are we contributing to a higher note, or are we contributing to the negativity? And there's that big teaching, and the Sufis talk about it too, of turning the other cheek. I'm not saying ignore it, but I'm trying to get us to think of elevating to a different pitch. I don't like to bring politics into things, and Murshid Hidayat didn't either. And even though Murshid Karim Bach was in a sense a politician, we didn't do that. But we do have to be practical and understand of contradictory forces. And of course, life is a contradiction. And I'm not gonna elaborate on things. We help in ways we can, people that we can help, and we don't. We can't really change the world, but we can change ourselves and our sphere of influence. That's the way we can contribute in a healthy, helpful, uplifting manner. So now with this teaching, I wanted to bring in these three wazifas. You can see them in your chat window. I hope everyone can. It's called Ya Wahab, Ya Razak, and Ya Fatah. Now, Wahab and Razak are often given to people who maybe are struggling with their finances or are looking for gainful employment or are trying to create more prosperity in their life. So that's a common way that they're given. But we're going to look at these practices along with Fatah slightly different. Excuse me. So Wahab is a divine blessing that is continually and universally flowing. And it flows without any interruption, and it goes freely without any exception of return. So this is the universe. This is the divine. This is God's blessing, is continually flowing towards us. And I think when we do those practices in the morning, those that do, the elemental breaths, the words are, I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. It's this flow. We're breathing in this wahab, this continual blessing. We're nourishing the cells and the fiber of our being so that we can charge up and give that back to the world. So that's kind of Razak. In this context, this is how we're looking at it. As a Wahhab, excuse me. And then Razak is the one that continually provides the means for us and what we need daily. So it's this continual, endless gifts to us. But what are the greatest gifts? Murshid uses the words of tolerance, forbearance, patience and love. You see those again and again, but those are the words of Jesus Christ. Here we're seeing it as Rahman without the end, Rahma, which is, comes Rahim and Rahman, and compassion, mercy, and love. So while our daily sustenance is getting fed, but also these endless gifts of if our daily needs are being met, is a kind of compassion and mercy and love. Okay. And then we're going to conclude with Fatah, which seems a little counterintuitive, but if we think of it as a water well that keeps going, it's not. So Fatah, we've worked with this over the last few months. It means to both begin and to open. Okay. So we've brought these two sacred words or sacred names or sacred attributes of Wahab and Razak into this sphere, and now we're opening to it. And Through it, we begin to open the heart, this is Fatah, to infinite possibilities of the divine presence. Amazing. It's a continual opening, and it is enlightenment that keeps happening. So we are opening more and more to this presence. Fatah gives a great, it's a great power to clear away the obstacles. In fact, when we do the mudra of it, it's palms at the heart, and then we open the fingers. So it's like this opening. And it opens the path to success. And it opens our heart to love and ecstasy. So Fatah is all those things. So if we put them all together, we use English words. This is what I came up with. See if this works for you. And what Wahab is super abundance too. So it's like a super abundance of the true gifts of compassion and mercy and love through the continual removal of obstacles on the path to success leading to enlightenment. How about that? So when we look at things in this way, there's no sacrifice. We will receive everything we need. Through our sacrifice, we can receive everything that we need to lead to the goal. So shall we do these together? Now, I want you to know that on the PDF that I'll be posting online, there's a link that goes to the Physicians of the Heart website. And there are pronunciations by a native Arabic speaker. It's a woman. There's one by Imam Bilal Hyde, not a native speaker, but a student of the language. And also Pirzia Anayat Khan, who I think studied with Imam Bilal Hyde and others to learn the language. So you can hear it, and there's subtleties. You know, the Arabic speaker really is so clear about, you know, every and every, you know, the others not so much. Imam Bilal Hyde almost over emphasizes it. Pirzi is a little softer in his pronunciation. The bottom line is, I don't think it is what you're saying, but it's your devotion in which you're saying it. So that's it, just your concentration. To think of this superabundance available to us that will meet all of our daily needs and beyond, and opening us to the great success, which leads to illumination and enlightenment. Wow, what more could they be? So as in everything, there is a little emphasis. I'll say the word Wahab, Wahab, Wahab. So there's a little emphasis on the hab, okay? Razak is, yeah, Razak. Yeah, it could even roll the R, ra. She says it, the native speaker, yeah, Razak. Okay, you don't need to do anything unnatural. Again, it's just the meaning that's flowing through us. We're praying. There's no right or wrong way. And then, Ya Fatah. So let's do 11 times aloud, then we'll do 11 times whispering, 11 times silently, but feeling this superabundance of the universe rising up to support us, fulfilling our needs, removing obstacles. And this is a continuous blessing. You know, use that image of a water wheel that Rumi gives us, this constant renewal. It's just happening again and again. So here we go. Ya Wahab, Ya Razak, Ya Fatah, 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 Yahwahab, Yahrazak, Yahvatah. Yahwahab, Yahrazak, Yahvatah. Yahwahab, Yahrazak, Yahvatah. Yahwahab, Yahrazak, Yahvatah. And whispering. Just silently breathing, feeling the stream of blessing, superabundance. Our needs are provided for, and all obstacles are removed. Yahvatah, Yahwahabo, Yahrazak, Yahvatah. Another practice that many of you have done is you maybe have learned Wahab as Wahabo. Kind of continues this blessing stream of this superabundance. And Murshida Vira, when she gave it to me, she asked me to imagine a beautiful river in emerald green passing from left to right, again and again, with that Yawahabo, Yawahabo. Of course, this green is a very healing color. It's a color of renewal, of freshness. And moving from left is as if we're moving from that limited side to the unlimited side and back again. And she also said, whenever I'm by a stream or a river or even the ocean as it's moving, to align myself and do the practice in that way with the flow of the river. So think about that. You can envision it, or you can, when you're near water, let that flow pass through the heart. It's healing. A few more sentences before we close. The idea of sacrifice has always existed in some form or another in every religion. Sometimes it has been taught as giving up one's possessions for the love of a higher ideal, which means that when we claim to love a higher ideal and yet not willing to give up something we possess for it, then there is a doubt about our devotion. And again, we don't need to give up all our possessions or our homes or anything. But there is something that we can give, even if it's our time to prayer and practice. But sacrifice of a possession is the first step, Murshid says. The next step is self-sacrifice, this idea of, I am this, I like that, I do this, I am this profession, I am blah, 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 blah. Which is the inner note. The next step is self-sacrifice, which was the inner note of the religion of Jesus Christ. charity, generosity, even tolerance and forbearance are a kind of sacrifice. For me, I add patience also. Maybe you have, think that's a good idea for yourself. And every sacrifice in life, in whatever form, means a step towards the goal of every soul. So if we can, let's again press our palms together and recite the prayer Khatum. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. We blow these sacred syllables into the palms of our hands. And we let this vibration pass over and through us. And in closing, we remind ourselves how fortunate we are to be here, to have this opportunity to be together, to have running water, electricity, a roof over our head, safety around us. We ask that all beings have these same graces and blessings in their lives. May they have the causes and conditions of wellness and happiness and peace. And one other little few words that I came across this week that I wanted to share as a dedication. May this time together serve to deepen our journey of awareness in becoming who we already are as God's beloved, as temples of the Holy Spirit, and as agents of love. And I know so many of you already are on the monthly gifting plan, and thank you. And some of you heard the call to raise it just a little bit as our expenses have gone up. So again, this is just my public service announcement to give as you can. And if you have a little extra, sometimes think about giving.